This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Esto es Atenea Americana.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin.
This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture. On the air and online.
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para Radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Bienvenidos.
Atenea Americana.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Bienvenidos.
From Stanford to the world.
Pre-Hispanic habitants of the Andes were highly advanced people. They had achieved great progress in medicine. They practiced cesarean births when needed. They put gold implants to fix skulls, fractures. They had knowledge of the number zero way before Occidental culture understood it and used it much. They had highly advanced irrigation and construction systems. But their kingdom was destroyed with the arrival of the conquistadores. Still today, they struggle to find its place, and even being a majority of the population as they are marginalized and many times even left behind. Today, we have the honor to have a guest that had dedicated her life to study, research, and even fight for native people of Los Andes. Her name, Eliane Carp Toledo. She is writing her seventh book on the issue, this time about the role of Occidental laws and democracy and how they relate to the tribal traditions of common law and goodwill.
There's a system of parallel systems of economy, whatever is more convenient and whatever is more available. If it is in small, very small towns in the highlands and in the Amazon, barter would tend to be the most adequate. You trade a product for another of a similar value that you consider is a similar value. So there's a whole system of appreciation of a crop, which is totally different according to the season, according to the difficulty of growing it, and that's another different world.
She is currently a visitor scholar at the Stanford University, but also the ex-First Lady of Peru from 2001 to 2006. She is married to ex-president Alejandro Toledo, and we are very grateful of her dedicating some of her time for us.
Can you tell us a little bit about your book and this subject about the difference in laws between the Occidental laws and the indigenous people's laws?
So in a nutshell, basically, I have been conducting a lot of interviews about indigenous leaders and indigenous peoples in what we call the Andean region, which is Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia. Mm-hmm. And I'm basically focusing this time just on Peru, a very in-depth analysis of what they are saying and what the indigenous peoples are telling us is their problems of exclusion from society, from benefiting from the goods of economic growth and scientific discovery for the same reason. So I am basically looking and taking their point of view, what they are saying. A lot of them have been saying it in their own language. So I passed their own language to Spanish, and from Spanish I am analyzing in the book what is their perception of the world as they see it today, as Peru growing into a democracy and into quite a prosperous economy. Are they participating? Are they receiving anything? Most of the riches are extracted from their land. Are they receiving anything?
Are they?
I would say no. According to my analysis, they say no, and the numbers from the Ministry of Economics, the data, also shows there is very little, if at all any, redistribution towards their communities. But there's a lot of extraction and a lot of environmental damage.
Any advanced development in the last 520 years?
For them?
For them.
I would say the economic situation has improved a little bit thanks to globalization and thanks to the valorization of certain fruit crops. That is a good economic niche for them, and they are taking advantage of it. So they are being incorporated toward the global economy. In terms of laws, I would say that it has been a great advantage that institutions of the UN have taken upon themselves to work with indigenous peoples of the world and produce laws that respect their human rights and their identity. So thanks to that, Peru as a nation and the Congress that makes the laws or that propose the laws has been obliged to think about it. And at the same time, the indigenous organizations have been pushing for that. They say, look, we have a totally new framework, a totally new body of laws here, which is international. And we want to be part of this world. We don't want to stay behind. We don't want to stay like it was in colonial times. So give us those privileges of those new laws and translate them into the national body of laws.
Great. And it has been moving forward.
It has been done. It's extremely slow. There is a resistance from the non-indigenous part of the society of doing it. But the work of the indigenous peoples has been very, very impressive for pushing towards that.
Great. And among these laws, you were explaining that there are also the laws that respect the earth and the environment.
A key issue, a very key issue. The respect for their spirituality, and in so much that most of their spirituality is related to nature, to Mother Nature, then a lot of the laws are geared towards respecting their environment, which is their house. This is where they live, their water, their land, the quality of the land, the animals that they hunt in a very, just what they need, not for selling. So a lot of those laws have had to be translated into national body of laws, and that is not easy. That is not easy, but it's very contemporary because, of course, it touches upon the environmental issue.
Are there any big contradictions between the laws of the native tribes and the laws that Occident is trying to
impose on them?
Is that difficult to merge them in something comprehensive?
It's difficult to merge them because they somehow see life and their worldviews are almost opposite. They are pragmatic, as we say. So the indigenous life is basically in community. It's basically respect of all living things. It doesn't consist in making holes and accumulating wealth for yourself. You have to redistribute that. It's not focused or obsessed by the individuality. It's not obsessed by material goods. So there are very often views which are totally opposite. But somehow in the democracy, we call it proto-democracy that we have created in Peru, because finally we got to have a democracy which is implemented and now is being implemented for 20 years consecutively, which is a great achievement. So finally, within that world, we have to build a consensus among all people. And of course, some people come from very different traditions and they do relate to the planet and to the earth very differently.
You Belong is an organization that helps mobilize individuals for volunteering and educational opportunities designed to advance international development efforts and promote cross-cultural understanding. Participants have the choice of 1 week to 6 months immersion placement in Latin America or Asia, or 2 week expeditions to learn about international development issues. For more information, visit youbelong.org. That's UBELONG.ORG.
Today we're talking with Eliane Carp Toledo. The topic: Indigenous people of the Andinian region and their role in democracy and law.
With the great complexity of the geography of Peru, is there a way how they can be part of the whole process from wherever they are around, up in a very high mountain or deep in the Amazon? Is there any effort made to go to them, actually make them communicate somehow?
Well, it is a fact, and we have data to measure that, that the state in general does not deliver well the goods of democracy and the goods of economic growth. It is complex. It doesn't manage them well, and it doesn't deliver them to citizens which are considered to be marginalized. So it's not only the geographical complexity of the Peruvian territory, it's also social exclusion based on ethnicity. And it's happening. And there is another fact, to be fair, is that delivering services to faraway communities, for instance, if they live at 3,000 meters of altitude in the Andean world, or if they are far inside the Amazon region, is a lot more expensive than doing it just in big cities. We have the example of vaccination campaigns for children, and we have made the costs, and it got to be at least three times more expensive than doing the same campaigns in Lima, for instance. So we had to ask for the help of international organizations. Some of them did them, helped us. But this has to be repeated continuously.
Of course, because kids keep getting born, that happens.
And then some of the vaccination, you know how it is, you have to repeat them, you have to have the syringes. As you, when it's in the Amazon, you have to come with refrigeration. Sometimes you only get there on a boat, lasts 1 week. It's very complex.
And these modern diseases get to them in the middle of the Amazon?
It gets to them precisely again because of the globalization of the economy and the fact that Peru's economy basically is based on extraction of resources, of natural resources. So there are lots of people who suddenly would come and open up an oil well. And they would mix in. Of course, the indigenous people would try to have some income, cash, which they're not used to. That's another problem. But they work with them. They communicate with them. There's lots of disease. New diseases get spread around. They are not vaccinated. So it's a whole vicious circle. And the state has to start rethinking about all this also. If there's an enterprise, there is a business there, if there are people working there, they should also take the medication along.
This is Atenea Americana, and I am your host, Isabel Jubes. You may find this and all my shows at stanfordhispanicbroadcasting.org. This is a bilingual cultural show, bringing you a window to the Latin and Hispanic universe. Every week, for 2 hours, one in English and one in Spanish, from Stanford to the world. You can also be part of this, leaving me your comments, sharing your thoughts, and even more at stanfordhispanicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to be part of this. And today we're talking with Eliane Carp Toledo. The topic: Indigenous people of the Andean region and their role in democracy and law.
The economy, one of the big problems, of course, is this
different
measurement for economic between both sides. You were saying that the traditional economy of the Incas has been of exchange, and exchange of goods and goodwill.
And services.
And services.
Yes.
Which is not the real economy that the Occidental people use or understand. So if you are a part in a little village, 3,000 meters.
Meters,
high, not feet.
No, about 10,000 feet.
Yeah, about 10,000 feet. Easily, And then do you actually exchange normal money, or you go with the traditional economy?
What's interesting is you can go both ways. There's a system of parallel systems of economy, whatever is more convenient and whatever is more available. If it is in small, very small towns in the highlands and in the Amazon, barter would tend to be the most adequate. You trade a product for another of a similar value. that you consider is a similar value. So there's a whole system of appreciation of a crop, which is totally different according to the season, according to the difficulty of growing it. And that's another different world.
So that's a huge cultural problem for them, that give them the shorter part of the stick, because they are not used to keep a lot of wealth. And then when the big guys come, they are just...
Yeah, their focus is not on taking advantage of the person, and their focus is not on accumulation of wealth. It's true. However, they have been extremely successful in integrating into the global and modern economy. And they do both. They also have webs in the internet.
Great.
And they negotiate on the very modern terms. So they do both. And then again, it depends on who and what kind of products.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me that the census actually say that the indigenous population is just 35%, which is completely false. How this difficulty to measure the amount of people get together at the moment also to go and vote, then obviously then big percentage of people doesn't know anything about what is happening that is going to affect them, because somebody's going to put a law that is going to affect their life.
Absolutely.
But they cannot go and vote for this person or the other because they probably are in the system.
Absolutely. So they are part of the system. Mm-hmm. And another thing, which I think is important to mention because we are in the US, but voting in Peru is mandatory. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to vote. You don't have to vote if you are, I think, 75 years over, or if you are less than 18. Mm-hmm. So the only limitation, if you are disabled, sick, or your age. But otherwise, it's mandatory. Everybody has to vote. And it's complicated because then you don't have the voting stamp on your ID, on your national ID, and it's very complicated to do business and go to the bank. So it is a problem. So they have to vote. Mm-hmm. And you are very right. How do they vote if they are not well informed? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of political clientelism from a lot of political parties who the month before elections would go and give them food for free.
Yeah.
We know that. It's all over.
It's
all over the place. So there's populist political parties would go and give them some cash, $10, if you vote for me, and they will check.
Yeah, or I'll give you food. They just give them beer.
Or just get them drunk and then you pre-fill the ballot.
Yes.
That also happens everywhere. We are working very hard towards training people, not only indigenous people,
everybody,
on how to vote based on knowledge, to have been informed who and what you're going to vote for. Since it's mandatory, it's extremely important. The programs on TV, there's some free space on TVs, of course, for the parties to explain their platform, but also for the state institutions to explain how to vote. Sometimes, because we have such a big proliferation of political parties, you can get as many as 20 on a ballot. It gets extremely complicated. People get confused. They also have to vote for members of the Congress at the same time. And we only vote once every 5 years. So it's very complicated. This whole has to go through a process of training. And the media has to participate in this. But it gets even more complex for the indigenous peoples. You are right. Because they don't have access to all that.
And they need to be literate.
But something very interesting has been happening is training through the media, which will be through screens, internet, or their phone even, where they are trained in their own language, and not in a written form, just verbally.
Oh, okay.
And then they will show the ballot and explain to them, supposing they chose Mr. Smith, how they would vote for Mr. Smith. So physically, they are told how to do it.
And they have the photos.
Yes, the ballots are with the pictures of the candidates, not just the name of the party.
Everybody, like in many countries in Latin America, people don't see the same way here, but everybody needs an ID.
ID is mandatory.
And it actually happens.
Not necessarily. Oh. There's another reason for that, which is also related to poverty and to the condition of being indigenous, is that indigenous people do not necessarily declare their children as being born when they are born, because maybe the municipality is too far. So after giving birth, the mother is not going to walk kilometers and kilometers to go and register the child. It's also very complex because for some reason it's the father that has to go and register the child. It's another machista procedure. So not all children are declared when they are born. They can be declared many years later.
And what happens if there is no father?
We're also working towards the fact that only the mother could declare that it's her child and give just her name. But still, and as we know, the most excluded of all human beings in society is the indigenous woman. She's also the poorest. If you don't have a birth certificate, you don't have a national ID. If you don't have a national ID, you cannot open a banking account and you cannot vote. And it's very difficult to get into school. So everything is related, and poverty tends to perpetuate itself in a vicious circle. That's how it happens.
Yeah, that's why it's the main problem about the ID. How do you get the ID? Then if you don't have the ID, you cannot vote for the person that is going to help you. Or so
exactly.
Everything is a circle.
Everything becomes a vicious circle. It definitely is a society that we have to, now that the democratic system is accepted and being in place for about 20 years, it's definitely work that we have to reinforce and implement better.
Laws like this 116 ordinance are implemented now for the indigenous people thanks to the general law that the UN is trying to...
UN and ILO. There's a whole number of them. They are found in internet, all of them, in a number of languages, even in indigenous languages. They're basically related to the respect of the identity, the beliefs, and the forms of organization and territory of indigenous peoples. So recognition of what they are, recognition that they are a special segment of society, which is different than the rest, and based on that, they have different rights. So it's an interesting concept because... although it's a democracy, there's a certain segment of the population which is under-registered, as we have mentioned very often, because the census are not good, and also because many of them simply don't exist. They are not born, as we have just mentioned. So the registration of indigenous people is not correct as we have it as per the census.
So if you weren't born legally...
if you're not registered as being born.
If you're not registered as being born, then how can you own this piece of land? And why will you, who doesn't exist, tell me that I cannot build a mall and a highway?
And that's
here?
Very good. Okay, so in Peru, what you have is collective rights and collective property. So it is a piece of land is given to a specific ethnic group. It's given to them. It can also be given within that ethnic group to specific families. Sometimes it's just the community that's in charge of doing this individually, not the state, because they know the members and who they are and who the families are.
So there has been an exchange of these special rights and laws for the indigenous people for a while.
Yes, there is. There is definitely an area where the two have to talk together and coincide and have to coincide, like territorial laws, property laws, even if they are collective. There is an area where they have to talk to each other, and we wish there would be much more.
And among these, I suppose, there are the use of water, rivers.
That's a main one. The use of water actually is a very big subject, as much as in Ecuador, as in Peru, and as it is in Bolivia. Indigenous peoples do not believe in private property of water. It's something unreal for them. It's not part of the way they see the world. And of course, the states want to privatize the property of water. So this is an ongoing, very complex debate. Also because indigenous peoples manage water differently, physically and technically.
What the state wants to do when they want to own the water is because it's for the maintenance of all the piping and all the infrastructure, basically, because they are not supposed to profit from it, isn't it?
They are not supposed to profit it. They do all the maintenance. They do the portable water also. Mm-hmm. And indigenous people do their own things. They basically use it for agriculture. So they have a totally different way of thinking about it and about the repartition of water and conservation. It's very different.
The traditions that come from the Incas had a very, very impressive...
Yes, and the collective ownership and taking turns precisely to open the gates of the water or to close it or see if there's too much or not enough. The way you privilege water towards one community or another, everything is discussed among them. But you cannot discuss it with the state or with the private sector, because you don't. It never happens. So it's the subject of the water altogether is a huge, huge subject.
And also because a big part of the country is a desert.
Yes.
Which has a lot of population, which...
concentrates most of the population.
Problem. Yeah,
exactly.
Which has more economic problems because they don't have the water and they cannot grow.
And as we are going through climate change, and as we have discussed previously, that is all changing now. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have very serious problems of deficits of water. Although countries which are lucky enough to have a part of the Amazon are very blessed with water, but it's not well used. And it's not well taken care of either.
International is a non-profit organization with charitable projects in the US, India, and other countries worldwide. SIWA's focus is on helping in the event of natural disasters and also providing support for refugee welfare, education, and healthcare, as well as promoting volunteerism. For more information, or if you'd like to donate, visit siwausa.org. That's SEWAUSA.org. Law in Latin America, even though there is a cultural machism, there are a lot of very progressive laws that have been there way before they have been in other countries like United States and other kind of rights that have been there. How is the approach to women issues and feminism in the native tribes?
So it's both of them have tendency to machismo. It's not easy. I think the arrival of the Spaniards, of course, did not make things easy. Mm-hmm. But on both sides, whether the indigenous or not indigenous, women have made a tremendous push and there's great improvements. One thing has to be said for the entire region of Latin America. We've had more women president, ministers, Congress than in the U.S. So one thing very good has to be said for that, even though they are considered machista societies, they in both cases, indigenous and non-indigenous, they push their way, they don't let it happen, they fight it, and they do get to power.
Yeah.
They do get to power. So at the beginning, we start to have positive discrimination laws, but then after it catches up, normally. Mm-hmm. And one thing's very interesting, I think, is, and I repeat it, that the fact that the whole region of Central and Latin America has had women president, not just one or two, quite a few.
Yes. And, well, feminist, although it's not really feminist, laws way before U.S.
And
education for universities, women are there, have been there before.
Before the Spaniards came, there were regions in Peru that had women leaders, very powerful. Mm-hmm. Priestess and leaders of their regions, they were extremely important before the Spaniards came. But little by little, things are starting to be on track.
Yeah, interesting, because even though Isabel la Católica, or Isabella the Catholic,
yes,
she was reigning and she was the one in power, and that's why we speak Castilian and not Aragonese, and she was the one leading the whole colonization.
She was financing
machista.
It, for sure.
Yes, it was a machista regime that she was actually putting in power.
Yeah, but one thing is very interesting is that sometimes women actually raise their own sons. It's very machista, which is something I will never understand. But another thing which is also very interesting is that women always find a way around to come to power or to have power.
Yes.
That's something also.
Yes.
Be surprised how strong is the indigenous women in the marketplace, in the highlands. She's the one that manages the money.
Right.
And just guess where she puts it.
Exactly. Not everybody can reach it.
Not everybody can reach it, exactly.
Water can develop its agriculture, can sustain itself in a way, but the desertic area, the coastal, has the biggest cities, the more urbanized region in the country. Lima, the capital, is there, but the water-rich area is also the poorest.
That's right, because they tend to concentrate in activities which benefit from less income. And then, because most of the benefits and the monies of these extractions necessarily go back to Lima, to the capital. And then the capital decides, through the Ministry of Economics, how it's going to redistribute to the regions.
And this is based in population numbers, where there's more people?
Yeah,
will
it's
more?
Based on, it was conceived what we call los canons, we call them the canons, they're types of royalties. So it's conceived as per indemnization precisely for the damages that have been done in the regions where the extractive economy activity is conducted. And it's considered an indemnization, and it's considered also a fund for development, which is really not very much happening because you need to do training for that, for the people to know how to develop projects.
During the last couple of decades, there has been a huge increment of urban populations because most of the times is because the big economical development, the access to education and healthcare is bigger and stronger around the cities. But also in developed countries is where this change is even more strong and effective. Is the same in Peru, or there are still a lot of population that prefers to be rural and they're going to stay like that, or a lot of people is coming to the cities?
Unfortunately, Peru has been following exactly the same tendency as most developing countries in Latin America. It's becoming increasingly urban. And today, 30% of the population lives in the capital city of Lima, which has no water by itself.
Yeah.
So we have a little problem there. This has been a tendency that started in the 50s. There has been huge migrations from the highlands to the coast. And the coast is a complete desert. This has been exacerbated during the 80s all the way to the 90s during 10 years because of the terrorist movement that we've had, which was called Shining Path. Mm-hmm. Shining Path basically happened in the highlands, in poor regions, and of course they migrated massively to the coast to escape the terrorist activities. Entire villages were deserted. There is now, with the boom of the Peruvian economy, a very slow movement that tends to have people not return, but acquire land and work in both places. So they would have the income from the informal sector of the economy from the city, and then they would have the agriculture and what they need to live in their original place, in provinces or in rural areas. Mm. So there is a tendency of having both.
Thank you for listening to Atenea Americana, your house of culture in the radio and online. In this bilingual show, I bring you every week 1 hour in English and 1 hour in Spanish, opening a window to the cultural Hispanic world. You can hear in the intro and at the final of the show, as well as right now, music from the legend of Latin jazz, Oscar Hernandez. This and all my shows are in StanfordHispanicBroadcasting.org, where I wait for your comments. I invite you to be part of this. And today we're talking with Eliane Carp Toledo. The topic, Indigenous People of the Andean Region and their role in democracy and law. How is the problem with terrorism and guerrillas in Peru and in indigenous areas? I remember big acts of terrorist attacks, the kidnappings, all during the 80s and part of the 90s, but you don't hear about it anymore.
It has been largely controlled. Of course, there was a strong relationship between terrorist movements and poverty. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was easy to recruit. It has been mainly controlled. There is now, though, a new phenomena which is happening and is very, very worrisome, which is an alliance between whatever is left of terrorism with narco-trafficking. Mm-hmm. So the terrorists are now becoming the guardians and the protectors of the narco-trafficking and making income on that. So the Andean region is seeing much of this developing. We didn't used to have that. So yeah, completely stripped off its ideological content and becoming just an instrument of violence just to make money.
Yeah, like it happened in Colombia. Exactly. And they have been struggling for decades to try to get out of that.
So we are having now, based on that, we are having now increasing problems of security that didn't used to be there.
And there are groups that ideologically indigenous or fighting for the indigenous rights, like Tupamaru and that kind of...
So they said. I have high doubts. That's what they were doing.
Narco traffic and something.
Yes, but they have been dismantled, particularly Tupac Amaru, Movimiento Revolucionario Tupac Amaru, MRTA, was known to have... captured the Japanese embassy. That was the last episode we knew of them. So they don't exist anymore, mainly. We have some remains of what was Sendero Luminoso, the Shining Path, in the Amazon region. Mm-hmm. And it's very close to where the areas of extraction or processing of coca leaves are.
I have the image of that spectacular moment, the bus full with all the rescue victims and the president in the front. It was an image that you don't forget.
My husband was also a hostage in the Japanese embassy. However, because he was in opposition to the Japanese former president, it's very interesting that the terrorists considered he was not an asset for them.
they could not negotiate
him.
Nobody's going to pay anything for you. You can go.
No, the Japanese president that we had before would definitely not pay for him.
Yeah.
So they let him go very early on.
Oh, God.
But he was there. He was there for a few days.
Wow.
Sharing the whole.
How was that for you?
It was very difficult because I was outside.
Yeah, I bet.
It was very, very difficult, the greatest tension of the family.
Sadly, they are reborn in other countries right now.
Yes, there's...
Very strong in Venezuela and other places.
It needs a lot of very good military logistics because they are better armed. Yeah. Their connection with the narco traffickers makes it that they are much better armed. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to... The transparency and accounting phenomena does not concern them like it concerns the state. It's a very difficult subject.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. I know that you are extremely busy and doing very important things with your books and your very important research.
We're trying to make every second count.
Yes.
Because we're so privileged having been here again.
Yes, and being in a position to change the world. That's great. And we're very grateful for you to come here and spread the voice and spread to everybody.
That's the purpose. And we're very happy that you have put up with this this whole program, that you do it for Hispanics and also bilingual.
Yes.
And although for me it's harder to express myself in English than in Spanish, we do try to reach out to have people understand how it looks on the other side of the fence.
Great. Yes, that's the idea, to raise the voice and show everybody how it is.
We also do things very well.
Yes.
It does happen.
Yes.
And we try to definitely, very genuinely improve with whatever we have.
Yes. And, a last note, we were talking a lot about indigenous people and the rights. They are a part of the country. They are not in reservations. They're everywhere.
That's something that my students here... Mm-hmm. Who are Native Americans, when they come to the class, they always are surprised to see how much of a big influence indigenous peoples have over their constitutions and over their laws and their way of life in South American countries. First of all, the proportion of the indigenous people in society is quite high,
yes,
mostly, definitely in the Andean region, and the way they have influenced the strong change on principles like democracy, justice, redistribution of goods, accepting diversity and different beliefs. They are not parked in reserves.
Well, thank you very much.
To you. That's great. Very, very great. And continue with the great work. And of course, a big hug to all the people who are listening.
Great. Yes.
And this was Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Esto fue Atenea Americana.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin.
This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture. On the air and online.
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Vuelve pronto.
Atenea Americana.
From Stanford to the world.
See you later. Remember to come back soon. Te vemos pronto. We'll be here.
Ciao.